The Jewish Heritage Foundation presents The Light of the Eternal People, an in-depth study of Jewish thought and practice based on original source material given by Rav Shmuel Irons, Rosh HaKolel, Dean of the Kolel Institute of Greater Detroit, one of the leading centers of Talmudic research and community education in North America. This lecture, titled How to Create Meaningful and Lasting Relationships, is dedicated to the memory and Le'ilui Nishmas Reb Raphael Moshe Pinchas ben Reb Yehuda Tzvi, Dr. Morris Hirschfuss of Blessed Memory.
One of the most difficult and profound works in our literature is the book of Job, Sefer Iyov. Job, the subject of the book, was a righteous man who was blessed with a large and wonderful family, as well as with inordinate material wealth. After being struck with repeated tragedies, his children and much of his wealth were taken from him, and he became afflicted with an intolerably painful disease. He was visited by three friends. According to the Talmud, they each traveled an enormous distance to be at his side. They shared the burden of his pain and attempted to help him come to grips with the events that had totally shattered his view of himself and the world. It was through their involvement and the involvement of yet another friend that Job eventually not only made peace with his condition, but lived to see much joy in his life. Regarding this story, the Talmud in Baba Basra in 16b makes the comment, "Oy chavruso kechavrei de'iov, oy misuso." Either friends like the friends of Job, or death. Without such friends, life is not worth living. In yet another context, the Talmud makes a similar comment. One of the great legendary figures of Jewish history was Choni HaMagel, Choni the Circle Maker. The events of the life of this saint are recorded in the Talmud, as well as in the works of the ancient Jewish historian Josephus Flavius. After having outlived his contemporaries, Choni found himself alone and unappreciated amongst a new generation that was unable to understand his intellectual and spiritual greatness. Choni prayed to God to take his soul. And again, the statement, "O chavrusa, O misusa," either friends or death. Life alone, without appreciation, without true friends, is not worth living. We all need friends. Having a friend to be there at your side at a time of grief or distress, and having a friend as a companion through life to reinforce one's sense of worth and dignity, are only but two of the many benefits that come with cultivating friendships. The importance of having friends, being a friend, and how to cultivate lasting friendships is the topic of tonight's lecture. We have divided this lecture into seven sections. The first letter of the title of each section spelling out the mnemonic acronym, FRIENDS. And I'd like to begin with the F of friends. Oddly enough, it's friends. We all need friends. I'd like to outline five reasons why it's important to seek out friends and friendship, and why your life will be all the more empty without having friends. And I've divided up into five sections spelling out the name L-I-G-H-T, light. The first The L is to lift you up when you are down. If you notice the quote in your handout, this is taken from the book of Koheles, Ecclesiastes, and from the bold print about it's better two or better than one. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. And woe to him that is alone when he falls, for he has no one else to help lift him up. The Talmud put it in this way. Ein chovosh mater atzmo bebeis hasurim. Someone in prison cannot release himself. You need an accomplice from the outside. It's not a matter just of strength to have a friend. But it's important to have a friend to see things clearly and objectively. Sometimes we're the prisoner of a prison that we construct on our own. This is essentially the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. There's a mitzvah of the Torah to console those that are mourning, those that are grieving. It's that other person who's coming to offer a good word, to put events in perhaps a different light that changes everything. The Talmud in Tainus in 22a relates the following story. Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the prophet, pointed out two people in the marketplace to one of the sages of the Talmud. And he said, you see those two people there? They look like regular, normal people. Nothing exceptional about them. These two people have a special place in the world to come. The sage, Rabbi Broca, approached them and asked them, what's your occupation? Evidently they weren't scholars, weren't rabbis. Says, we're jesters. We're comedians. And we see people that are depressed, we may go out of our way to cheer them up. And furthermore, when we see two people quarreling, we strive hard to make peace between them. These unusual people, we don't know of any other great mitzvahs that they did. Their sole reason why they have such a place that's prepared for them is because they went out of their way to make other people feel good. But if you don't have friends, you can't count that these two jesters will just pop by and cheer you up. They're not made to order. I don't know how many of you in the audience remember the tragic story of Kitty Genovese. She was a young woman who was killed in Queens, New York. It was, I don't know how many tens or hundreds of people heard her screams. No one lifted a finger to help her. You can't take friendship for granted. You want that benefit, people to intervene in your life to help you. You have to cultivate that friendship. Again, in terms of this aspect of friendship, having someone to help you where you can't help yourself, creating friends is a form of insurance. We take elaborate measures to check out competing insurance plans to make sure we have all that we and our loved ones have what they need for times of emergency, whether it be fire, health, life insurance. Cultivating friends is a form of emergency insurance. The cost of that insurance, of course, your premium, is your willingness to do the same when your friend or friends are in need. It's a two-way street. Friends aren't there merely to leech off. some people have a notion, you know, friends are just good, you know, when they're good to you. But a friend in need is a pest. To have a friend, you have to be a friend. And you can't underestimate the power of friendship and the power that we have inherent in us to reach out to someone else. And I'd like to share with you a story. This is from an article that my daughter gave me. And it starts off, this article, I heard this story when I was in Vietnam. It was told to me as fact. I have no way of knowing for sure that it is true, but I do know that stranger things have happened in war. Whatever their planned target, the mortar rounds landed in an orphanage run by a missionary group in a small Vietnam village. The missionaries and one or two children were killed outright, and several more children were wounded, including one young girl about 8 years old. People from the village requested medical help from a neighboring town that had radio contact with the American forces. Finally, an American Navy doctor and nurse arrived in a jeep with only their medical kits. They established that the girl was the most critically injured, and without quick action, she would die of shock and loss of blood. A transfusion was imperative, and a donor with matching blood type was required. A quick test showed that neither American had the current type, but several of the uninjured orphans did. The doctor spoke some pidgin Vietnamese, and the nurse a smattering of high school French. Using that combination, together with much impromptu sign language, they tried to explain to their young, frightened audience that unless they could replace some of the girl's lost blood, she would certainly die. Then they asked if anyone would be willing to give blood to help. Their request was met with wide-eyed silence. After several long moments, a small hand slowly and waveringly went up, dropped back down, and then went up again. "Oh, thank you," the nurse said in French. "What is your name?" "Heng," came the reply. Heng was quickly laid on a pallet, his arm swabbed with alcohol, and a needle inserted in his vein. Through this ordeal, Heng lay stiff and silent. After a moment, he let out a shuddering sob, quickly covering his face with his free hand. "Is it hurting, Heng?" the doctor asked. Heng shook his head. But after a few moments, another sob escaped, and once more he tried to cover up his crying. Again the doctor asked him if the needle hurt, and again Heng shook his head. But now his occasional sobs gave way to a steady, silent crying, his eyes screwed tightly shut, his fist in his mouth to stifle his sobs. The medical team was concerned. Something was obviously very wrong. At this point, a Vietnamese nurse arrived to help. Seeing the little one's distress, she spoke to him rapidly in Vietnamese, listened to his reply, and answered him in a soothing voice. After a moment, the patient stopped crying and looked questioningly at the Vietnamese nurse. When she nodded, a look of great relief spread over his face. Glancing up, the nurse said quietly to the Americans, "He thought he was dying. He misunderstood you. He thought you had asked him to give all his blood so the little girl could live." "But why would he be willing to do that?" asked the Navy nurse. The Vietnamese nurse repeated the question to the little boy, who answered simply, "She's my friend." Greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for a friend. This is how the article ends. It goes beyond the parameters of this lecture as to the requirements that one friend involves himself in the life of another. According to Jewish law, that one is required to help up until giving one's life, but not including. But I sure in a moment of real need. It would be wonderful to have a friend like that. So the L, again, is lift you up when you're down. That's one purpose of having friends. The I is inspire you. The quote that we have in the notes is taken from Ogos, one of the tractates of the Talmud that deals with ethics and morals. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, one of the great teachers of the Talmud, asked his disciples, which is the proper way, if there be one thing that a person should do in life, one key that would open up the rest of his life to spiritual growth, what would it be? One of his great students replied, a good friend. And he asked another question. What would be the worst thing? What would be one thing to stay away from? If you could stay away from one thing in life, what is that one thing to stay away from? And Rabbi Yeshua again answered, says, a wicked friend. Like it or not, we are a product of our environment. In fact, when it comes to choosing friends, the Talmud teaches us another place in Ovos. It's better to be a zonav la'royos, a tail to lions, than a head of foxes. We know in joining groups, it feels very good to be the leader, to get that recognition and appreciation. But in the process, we have to be very careful that the very people that are lifting us up are not dragging us down. We know there are 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. One of those mitzvahs is vo sidbuk. You should cling unto God. And the Talmud explains the meaning of this. Is that we should create a godly environment. That when we have business contacts, to the extent that we can, they should be people that we could learn from. And when we have marital contacts, the families that we want our children to marry into, the kind of associates that we want to have, we should try, to the ability that we have, make sure that those people are people that can have a positive influence on our lives. We touched upon this last week's lecture was about children. This is an area which we did not touch upon, but it's very important when it comes to children as well. Again, we are limited, but to the extent that we can, and according to the influence we can exert upon our children, it's important for them to have playmates and friends and colleagues that again will lift them up and not pull them down. So one very important thing to look for in choosing a friend, because a friend can be a very powerful tool, is look for someone who has qualities that you feel that will inspire you, lift you up, and be a positive influence in your life. So again, the L, we go back, is to lift you up. I is inspire you. The G is guide you. The Talmud, there's a quote from the Talmud, it's an interpretation of a verse in Proverbs, that when one has worries, it's prudent not just to keep it inside. Very often it's important to articulate our fears to others. Perhaps they have a different outlook, way of looking at things, and they could give us that advice that we're sorely needing. There's an incident that's recorded in the Book of Kings probably one of the most important single incidents in Jewish history. You're all probably aware that they've just celebrated 3,000 years since the conquest of Jerusalem. The first Jewish king in Jerusalem was David, David HaMelech. He had a son, Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech. Under David and Solomon, the country of Israel, north and south, were united as one kingdom. Under the reign of Solomon's son, Rehoboam, there was a split. The northern kingdom called themselves Yisrael, and the southern kingdom, Yehuda, Judah. And from that time on, there were two Jewish kingdoms. Often they were at war. The idea of having two kingdoms was probably more than any one thing dragged the Jewish people down, till ultimately both kingdoms went into exile. What triggered the split was that after Solomon had died, and the taxes were quite heavy, the people of Israel, the northern kingdom, pleaded to Rehoboam they needed a reduction in taxes. I don't know if it was 15% across the board, but they wanted a reduction in taxes. There were two groups of advisors that he had. One were the old advisors of his father Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech. And they advised him to go easy, reduce taxes. The other group were younger, less experienced advisors, personal friends of Rehoboam. They advised to keep the taxes high and don't listen to the people, but you should do what's best, what you feel is for the country. Rehoboam followed the advice of his young advisors. The rest is history. The northern kingdom went to war. They split. They'll only be united again at the end of history, at the time of the Messiah, Mashiach. So it's very important to look for a friend that you feel has the objectivity and the wisdom that when you need that advice, there's someone there to ask and hopefully be forthcoming. So the G is guide you. H is help you. That's physical help. And again, we're quoting from the verse in Ecclesiastes and Kohelis. If one prevails against him, if a single person, it's only one person, but two, when there's two people, it's very hard for an attacker to subdue. We know this is the advice we give our children. Travel in pairs. When it comes to life in general, people are reluctant to start up with a group. It's divide and conquer. There's strength in numbers. It's important not to be alone, to have the comfort of that strength. And the last T is teach you. In the yeshivas, when the Talmud is studied, it's studied in pairs. They're called chavrusas. To make sure that one doesn't have just their own ideas, goes off on a tangent, and never comes back. There's always the other person to challenge, to ask questions. You need to share not only your fears, your concerns, but your ideas. And here we quote again, we quote the Talmud. You're on the top of page 3. That discourages the study to study alone. Because of all the errors that could crop up in your thinking if you don't share your ideas. So again, just let's just review what we have so far. The advantages of having a friend are L, someone to lift you up. I, someone to inspire you. G, someone to guide you, to give you sound advice. H, someone to help you if you're when you're in need, when you're being attacked, and not necessarily a brutal attack. But in a community, when we're together, there are differences of opinion. And very often a single person could be the victim of verbal abuse. When you have your friend next to you, there's a reluctance. And finally, T, to teach you. To share your ideas. Not only is it important, just theoretically, to have a friend, but we're actually required to go through the effort of acquiring a friend. And sometimes it's not easy. If you notice the quote here on page 3, and this is again taken from Ovos, and the language is kene lecho chover. It says, acquire for yourself a friend. It's the same word as buy yourself a friend. And here we quote right below on page 3. This is from one of the works of one of the major commentaries on Ovos, the Rabbeinu Yonah, who lived in the 13th century. And he gives two explanations of what it means to acquire a friend. The first is the idea of spending money. I mean, you don't buy someone outright. You know, there's not a... I know there used to be a slave market. I don't know if there's a friend market, you know? Someone looking for a friend to the highest bidder. However, there is the idea of remembering that friend. You cultivate. You know, it's their birthday. You know, you can spend the money and take them out. And ultimately, as it is with many mitzvahs, you know, you get what you pay for. And it reminds me of a story that I heard this Simchas Torah. You know, at Simchas Torah, in our shul, in the Kollel, we bid. There's a whole auction for Atah HaReisa, for the various honors that are given. And the one who conducted the bidding told us the following story. I hope it's not a true story. But it's a great story. There was a town in Europe, and in any society, in any community, there's a broad spectrum. Different people who have different special qualities, some positive and some not so positive. This particular person was the town's miser. He never spent a penny on anything. And in those days, there was a very large beggar class, unfortunately. There were many people who needed help. And on Shabbos, they would crowd around the back of the synagogue, the back of the shul. So when the regular congregants would leave, they would have to meet them on the way out. And as a matter of course, the congregants would invite the poor people, those who didn't have a home, a place to have Shabbos, and they would invite them and to give them the warmth of a family meal. This miser, needless to say, never invited anyone to his home. And the following, on one Saturday morning, the rabbi issued a proclamation that there are so many people that are in need. Every single person of this congregation must, without exception, take in someone for a Shabbos meal. This miser was stuck. He never did this before. He didn't even know what to do. And he procrastinated, didn't know what to do. And, you know, his wife was busy preparing Shabbos, and they just prepared Shabbos for the two of them. And it was running late, and he knew that he had to do something here. And he quickly, this was already on Friday, he ran to the fish store, at least to buy the poor man, the person that he was going to invite, he'd buy him some fish. And he went to the fish man, and he asked him, you know, what, you know, he'd like to, you know, to buy something. And he pointed to a certain fish. How much is that? Oh, it's wonderful. It's $5 a pound. Do you have anything a little cheaper? And he pointed to something else. Well, this one is $4.50. And from the look of the customer, it looked like it was a little too expensive. And he kept on pointing to one fish after another till the price got down to $1.50 a pound. And the customer said, you know, I never spent that much for anybody or anything. Do you have anything a little less expensive? And the proprietor didn't know exactly what to do, and he remembered, oh yes, there's a fish in the back. It's about 2 weeks old. I was planning to throw it out, but you know what? If you want to take it, you can take it. It's only a quarter. It's fine. Now that was a bargain. The fishman wrapped the fish. He brought it home. As soon as they unwrapped it, they smelled that there's something fishy here. But he told his wife, go prepare the fish. It's good enough for our guest. Anyways, he goes to shul, so Friday night. On the way out, he picks up some unfortunate individual. Says, why don't you come home with me? Felt good. He had prepared something. And he took the poor man home. Of course, the miser himself ate what his wife had prepared, you know, gefilte fish and chicken soup and knedlach and chicken. But the poor man, he prepared this fish. It was a large piece of fish. But that's all, plus the challah that he had cut for him, that's all he was willing to give him. And the man smelled also there was something a little fishy. But he's a poor man and he was very hungry. And he finished the fish. But already, by the time he started walking home from the meal, his stomach didn't feel that good. And the pain got worse and worse through the night, and he was tossing and turning. He was sleeping in what is known as a hegdish. That was like it was a public hostel for the poor, for the indigent. And he was screaming in the middle of the night, and the other people who were sleeping there knew there was something wrong. They called a doctor in the middle of the night, and there was already a vigil. So the doctor didn't know what to do, and he gave him some medicine, and everyone heard that this poor man was sick. And the news spread in the shul, and the miser says, so this was the man from the description that he had invited out. And on the way back home, he stopped off in the hegdish, he stopped off in the hostel to see how that poor man was doing. The man, unfortunately, was in terrible pain, but he visited him, wished him a good Shabbos, and he went home. By nightfall, the community was informed that the poor man had passed away. And he didn't have any relatives, and they announced that everyone, the congregation should come together at his levaya, at his funeral. And all the congregation came, they attended the funeral, and they buried him with honor. And walking back to the funeral, the miser had the greatest smile on his face. And he came back to his wife, and he said, ah, look at this. For only a quarter, I invited the poor, I visited the sick, and I buried the dead. Oh. What a Metziah. Because it was a real bargain that quarter. Hopefully, we have our idea of doing mitzvahs and spending money should be a little different. And when it comes to friends, one should realize that if you have someone that you feel has many of the qualities that we outline, if not all, it's worthwhile to cultivate that friendship, even if it means to spend the money and the time, because it's very well spent. But there's another explanation the Rabbeinu Yonah gives as what it means to acquire a friend. And it continues on, or alternately. It means that one should acquire, means actually keep a friend through appeasing him verbally and in a soft tone. And he shouldn't become impatient with his affairs, but rather he should bear the brunt of his statements, even though they may be directed against him. And he should not retort in kind. For without this forbearance, the love amongst friends will not remain. We're assuming that the person you're choosing as a friend is a human being, not an angel. And he may have many great qualities, but he may not be perfect. And very often in a friendship, and this we'll discuss a little later on, words develop. You know, because because of the friendship, there's certain liberties that one friend takes, and very often remarks are made without realizing are very hurtful. And the choice is, should you keep that friend, because the friend does have many good qualities, many sterling qualities, or should you drop him? And this Rabbeinu Yonah says, if you found someone that has many of those qualities that you need, you should bite the bullet, so to speak. You should have the patience and tolerance, because it may be a nuisance. But on the other hand, because of those good qualities, it's worth it all. One of the great problems we have is that sometimes we're looking for perfection in others, even though we don't have it in ourselves. You know, it reminds me of the story. This is what I was told when I was learning in yeshiva before I got married. This is the advice that I had from one... when one young man told me, who himself wasn't married either. But he told me the story of the man who was looking for the perfect wife. Looking for the perfect woman. Years and years he looked until he found her. Yeah, but she was looking for the perfect man. Every single one of us has imperfections. If we'd be perfect, no reason to live. The whole reason we're alive is to grow up.